This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest tonight is one of the great jazz guitarists, Vic Juris, who is not only here to talk about his wonderful music, but also to talk about boxing. Vic, thanks for being here.
Oh, great to be here, Doug.
You are not the only artist on Sports Jam that loves to talk about boxing. Recently on the show, we had Monty Alexander talk about his love of getting into the ring and watching those fighters. This all goes back for you to Cassius Clay days. Tell us about how you got to become a fan of boxing.
Well, of course, Muhammad Ali at the time, Cassius Clay, was so charismatic. And every little kid on the block wanted to see him lose to Sonny Liston, who, of course, had destroyed Floyd Patterson two consecutive bouts with one-round knockouts. So there was so much hype for this fight, and that's all people were talking about. I mean, you know, through little transistor radios and being blasted at his storefronts, so my dad and I listened to the radio to the, you know, one of the major upsets of all time.
They might be stopping it. That might be all, ladies and gentlemen. Get up there, Joe.
The year was 1964 when Sonny Liston, the heavyweight champion of the world, could not come out to answer the bell for the seventh round, and thus Cassius Clay became the heavyweight champion of the world.
That just kind of drew me into boxing because, you know, Muhammad Ali was such a great self-promoter that you just couldn't help but watch one of his title defenses. And then that got me interested in, you know, some of the other fighters of the time. But that was my initial connection with boxing.
Some boxing fans have wavered through the years, saying there's not the great champions that they used to be. But do you still enjoy watching boxing?
Oh, sure. There's some fantastic champion. Floyd Mayweather, of course, who's undefeated, is a master boxer. He's always fun to watch. The heavyweight division is perhaps not quite as interesting since Mike Tyson retired. But in the lighter divisions, there are some amazing fighters out there today.
What is it about pugilism, boxing, that draws Vic Juris or makes your juices flow? I mean, obviously playing guitar makes you, you know, a different person on stage. But what is it about those fighters in the ring?
I don't know, you know. I don't know what I can admit to. I'm not the kind of person that goes home and punches the wall, you know. It's just something about the sport. It's exciting. I don't know. I guess maybe I was in the Roman Colosseum in a former life. I have no idea, but it's nonstop action, you know, that really piques my interest. I know drummer Mike Clark is a really big boxing fan too. You know what? I'll have to ask him that question sometime. There's no one sentence answer for that. But I've thought about it. Maybe I need to take a look at this.
When it came to Cassius Clay, obviously he won in 1960 in the Olympics. But a lot of fans, you know, became boxing fans by watching those great matches in the Olympics and seeing some of the great champions develop. Is there anybody special for you watching in the Olympics?
I think Sugar Ray Leonard. That was pretty amazing time. And also George Foreman. You know, when he held up the American flag at the end of his gold medal fight. I think they were both memorable Olympic fighters who, of course, went on to become champions.
You're always very busy, but during this time that you were listening and with your father and these fights, did you ever get to go and see any of the great champions?
I've never been to a prize fight. I've never had the experience live. But with my dad, right before Muhammad Ali got in trouble with the government, you know, for the draft, his last fight before that was with Zora Foley, and in the old days in the '60s, in the television listings, they used to They used to place the listing of New York, and then in kind of like a faded parenthesis, they'd have Philadelphia next to it. And there was, I think Channel 3, which was the NBC affiliate, was showing the fight, and New York wasn't showing the fight. So my dad got up on the roof of our house, and we had an old makeshift antenna. He said, stand in front of the Channel 4 till it becomes Channel 3. And he was up there for an hour turning the antenna, screaming from the roof, how is it coming in? And we got kind of a snowy picture, but we watched the fight.
That's great. That's my, I love it.
Yeah, that was really incredible. You know, everyone's, you know, I'm sure the young people are really laughing about this. This is before the days of live streaming.
Did Dad have any influence on you when it came to music?
My dad was a great lover of music, and my mom still is. But he liked to dabble in electronics. We had one of the first hi-fi stereo systems on our street, and he would bring home you know, a lot of the great vinyl at the time. He liked Stan Getz, and he liked a variety of music. But that's how I really got into music, was through, you know, my dad's audio dabbles. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was a great time.
10 years old when you started playing guitar, I understand.
Yeah. We just happened to stumble on a guitarist named Ed Berg. And we didn't know what a great jazz player he was, so the lessons kind of started with, you know, simple chords and reading, and then Ed kind of got me into Django Reinhardt and Barney Kessel and Johnny Smith and players, and lending me the recordings and things. So he's actually the guy who turned me on to jazz.
There have been so many guests here on Sports Jam, both the artists themselves or just fans, who have this connection between music and sports. Do you see a connection? Is there a reason why Vic Juris is a boxing fan yet so skilled with the guitar?
I think playing sports or it's very good for your time and your breathing. And, of course, there's a rhythmic connection in both that's extremely important. So, that's probably why I'm attracted to both sports and music, is because of the rhythmic quality of both.
But yet we'll never see you put on a pair of boxing gloves. Well, no, you need those hands.
I don't think so. Not at 60 years old. I don't think that's going to happen, Doug.
You're in the middle stages of a wonderful career. You've had such a tremendous run when it comes to playing the guitar. At this point in your life, you are so busy. You're out there. Not only we'll get into your teaching in a little bit later, but what is it that keeps Vic Juris on a very regular schedule playing the guitar?
Well, I enjoy live performing. I'm still trying to keep raising the bar every year. I'm not trying to sit back on anything. I keep trying to get better, and I try to surround myself with other musicians who are trying to move forward. It's a little, you know, in my age group, you know, a lot of people don't hang out as much as they used to, but there are some that are still interested in raising the bar. So it's the challenge. I love the music. I also love working with the young people now, you know, teaching for three colleges. So that keeps me up.
When you were young, you played basketball in high school. Tell us
a little
bit about that. I
played intramural basketball. And on my way home from school every day, I used to hit the playground. And before practicing the guitar, we shoot hoops for hours, you know. I still like to do it when I go to the gym. The last gym I belonged to was also frequented by Bill Bradley, But I never got around to challenging him to one-on-one, but
probably good that you didn't.
Probably a good idea.
But you did follow the Bill Bradley Knicks in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, that was such an exciting time with the starting five of Willis Reed, Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, Bill Bradley, Dave DeBuscher. That was an amazing team.
That's when I was really, truly the only time I was a huge NBA fan. I'm not sure what was it. You know, we've had Earl Monroe on this program. I'm not sure what was it about that team that was so special that so many people still talk about the Frazier-Monroe backcourt, DeBuscher, Bradley,
and you had
Willis
Phil,
Reed,
Phil Jackson,
Phil Jackson off the bench, and you had Dick Barnett.
Dick Barnett, yeah.
What a team, Dean Memminger. What was it about that for you that you liked the Knicks so much?
I think you just used the word team. I think that was a total team effort. It wasn't about having one superstar. It was an extremely dedicated team, well coached by Red Holzman, who Phil Jackson, will tell you was a major influence on his coaching, and also the leadership of Willis Reed. Remember when Willis limped out onto the floor and won the game for the Knicks?
And I think we see Willis coming out.
Here he comes right now, 6'10" from Grambling, the captain of the Knicks, the most valuable player of the NBA. It's a standing ovation at the new Madison Square Garden. This is a 38 sellout crowd, and they have been reacting to their Knickerbockers the same way all season long. And he has hit two in a row, and they are beside themselves.
I mean, this guy was a warrior. I mean, a real hero. There are, I'd have to say, Scott Stevens from the Devils is also a warrior, too. I've seen, he's one of the greatest defensemen in hockey. Like, get out on the ice and play with 14 stitches. There are some guys that just will not give up, But Willis was, that was a major influence on me as a young teenager to see that kind of determination. He's really one of my heroes.
I'm glad that you pulled Scott Stevens out there in this interview. What was interesting when the Prudential Center first opened up and the first concert there was Bon Jovi, and I was waiting outside, and there comes Scott Stevens. And there's something that's not quite right about when it comes to the Devils' history is the fact there was Scott Stevens going through the crowd, and not that many people recognized him. And I said, his number obviously is, the banner is up, one of the greatest Devils of all time. And if it was any other team or if he had played for the Rangers, I don't see Scott Stevens walking through any crowd without being mobbed by fans.
I was there for that banner raising.
You were?
Oh, yeah.
So you enjoy watching hockey as well?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's a sport that you like to physically be at to watch?
If you've never been to I'm going to say a Devils game, because they're right around the corner here. If you've never seen hockey live, you're really missing something. It's like boxing in a way. It's nonstop action. I mean, from start to finish. And it's a lot better to see live than it is on the small screen.
It's my favorite to watch live.
It's a fantastic sport.
You're listening to Sports Jam on WBGO, The Jazz Source. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest tonight is guitarist Vic Juris. you talked about playing basketball and when you were in high school playing intramural basketball and talking about the team concept. Is there the team concept? You've been a team player on stage for so many years.
Yeah, I've been very lucky, more as a sideman than a leader. I've played with, you know, really a who's who of band leaders and jazz, and that's been you know, very rewarding. It's taught me a lot, you know, and about leading my own groups. But that's the whole concept of playing in a group. You know, is the team effort. You know, in jazz, the key word is really listening. You know, you're not passing a ball or anything, but in a way, you are. You know, you have to listen to what, as a chord instrument, what the bass and drums are doing, as well as, say, the vocalist or a horn player. So as being the chord instrument, you're kind of like the team captain in a way. You kind of determine the harmony and the direction of the rhythm section.
With the Dave Liebman Group, compare that to the Knicks. Who are you and who is Dave and... who are the players of that group?
Well, you know, Liebman is an amazing human being. You know, I mean, he's probably taught me more than anyone else. He's definitely the team captain. You know, the core group was just disbanded recently. Tony Marino on bass, Marco Marcinko on drums, and we also had Phil Markowitz on keyboards. Jamie Haddad is a drummer and percussionist, but that group started off with me as the second horn, being the guitar, and then eventually became a quartet where I was not only playing horn parts with him, but also taking care of the chording and the harmony, and also electronic effects and things.
Now, that was a great run you had with that group. Just at some point, it's time for new projects, I would assume.
Yeah, it was really time for all of us to move on. You know, David has started a new band with some younger players, and as Miles Davis did in the late 60s, you know, giving other people a chance. And, you know, it was just time for us to friendly parting, and we're still doing projects together. We're going to do a week at Birdland with his big band in September, and we just did a new recording with the big band. So, well, we're still going to play together, but not in that capacity.
You're playing a lot with your wife lately.
Yeah, my wife, Kate. Kate Baker is a fantastic vocalist, and we've been doing some duo things in the area, you know, in New York and New Jersey, and we're about to do a CD, Kate's first CD coming up this summer. So we're kind of assembling the material and the band for that. But it's going to be great for her to have her first project coming out.
Does she like boxing?
No, Kate's not a boxing fan. I don't know many ladies that are boxing
fans.
Yeah,
so is there like... Is that a time to get away from, you know, how do you handle when you want to watch a boxing match? What does Kate do?
Well, I have kind of my own, like, private space up in the attic where I have, you know, my HBO.
That's your man cave.
Right. Yeah, that's what they call it now, man cave. It's not as high tech as some, but it's it serves the purpose.
What kind of special thing is that, is to be able to do projects with your wife?
Well, what's great about what keeps it very interesting for me is we can play in duet where she's singing and then the guitar is the orchestra behind her. So I get to try all different kinds of things, some single lines, some chord things. So that's a very fresh approach. And then we also do things in quartet and quintet with her as, you know, being more out front. Vocalists and me being, you know, more in charge of the rhythm section and that sort of thing. We've been doing some, like, more Brazilian types. We've had some great players in the band. Harvey S. has been playing bass and Elio Alves on keyboards. And so we've had some really fortunate, you know, in this area. There are so many great musicians to pool from.
Recently, WBGO Statehouse correspondent Phil Gregory saw you performing live, and I know he called me one morning. We talk every morning when we plan our attack is how we're going to cover New Jersey, and he was just like, Vic was wonderful. I said, well, yeah, yes, he is. And he was just thrilled to be in the audience to watch you perform. Performing live, you like acoustic guitar, you talk about Brazilian. How physical? You're in such great shape, and you mentioned the gym earlier. How do you attack a guitar?
Well, acoustic guitar is physically harder to play. You know, the tension of the strings is a little tighter. The action's always a little... a little higher than an electric guitar. And you're depending more on the sound directly from the instrument. Where the electric, you're not really hearing the guitar so much, you're really hearing the amplification. So you're kind of, with electric, you're at the mercy of a good amplifier. Where acoustic, you're kind of forced to really make the sound. So I like to split the difference between the two. At home, I generally will just play acoustically. Rarely will I play electric unless I'm working on some effects or pedals or things of that nature. But the best way to keep your chops up is just to, in practicing, is to play the acoustic guitar, because you're really hearing the instrument, not the amp.
Now, you have certain guitars that you like. Do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, I recently got an acoustic. I got my first Martin guitar, which I'm really excited about. It's amazing. I've never owned one in my life, so I went out to the factory. They were nice enough to hand pick one for me, and we made a nice deal and a nice relationship. And my main guitars, electric that I play, are my main electric is made by Tom Doyle, who's an electronic and woodworking genius. He was Les Paul's right-hand man for 40 years. And not only tweaking his guitars and improving them, but also his sound man. And he's amazing. I also, another electric I have is made by Rick McCurdy, which is I use quite often too, which is kind of modeled after the Doyle guitar. But that's a really fantastic instrument. Those are the two main ones.
People like me, we see musicians changing guitars throughout a concert. We don't understand how that all works out. Can you give the average music fan how much of a difference it really does make to change guitars for certain songs?
Yeah, if you go to see a group like the Rolling Stones, you'll see that Keith Richards and Ron Wood, they change guitars after every song. I don't have that kind of budget, you know. But I'll generally use one throughout the game. I may switch over to the acoustic, which is a very obvious sound. It's really more of a personal thing in the way the player hears the sound, or maybe they wrote the particular composition on that instrument, but it's more personal. They would probably notice it more than you. Sometimes they'll switch guitars, and I don't really even hear the difference. But it's more about the feel and the personal, you know, personal relationship you have with that sound or in that moment.
If you had an opportunity to play with anyone of the past, who would that be and why?
That's interesting. Someone else, I just did like a questionnaire interview for a interview, and a magazine in Europe, and the word that came out was two words that came out was Eric Dolphy. I just think that would be an amazing experience. You know, I liked his approach. And one of my CDs in the past, I did a CD called "Remembering Eric Dolphy" for Steeplechase years ago, where I recorded four or five of his compositions, then wrote a few around it that were kind of Dolphy-esque. I just think that it'd just be similar interests musically, and I just liked. He was just very daring and very, you know, taking a lot of risks, and what he did at the time was really phenomenal, you know, in his free jazz concept as well as his inside harmonic concept and the use of bass clarinet. I think guitar and bass clarinet is a very, very interesting combination. I did it once with Bob Mintzer years ago. Bob is a very great bass clarinetist. And there's something about that timbre that really works. But I just, I don't think Eric Dolphy gets enough credit for his accomplishments.
Is there any tune that you've ever played or written about that was inspired by boxing?
I wrote a tune called Sugar Ray years ago that is kind of a fast, I wrote for Sugar Ray Leonard, not Sugar Ray Robinson. Never recorded it. But that was inspired by him. It's the only one I can think of.
Can you give us a little hum, a little?
No, you don't want to hear that.
Oh, sure we do. Sure we do.
I can't even, you know what? I can't even remember, but I remember it was a very fast line that, and I remember playing it once live with saxophonist Arnie Lawrence, and I think that's the first and only time it was ever played. But it was right around the time of the, I think the second Leonard Duran fight.
Recently, we had talked to the director of the film documentary Trials of Muhammad Ali. You mentioned that the Ali-Liston fight was really the jump start for you loving the sport of boxing. Muhammad, as we know, is suffering from Parkinson's. But if you had the opportunity to sit down and have a short conversation with the great champion, what would you want to know?
I would really like to know a lot about his training regimen and his of course his diet at the time. You know, I know he did a lot of running, and but I think it was deeper than that. I'd like to know more about his mental preparation and things of. And how he worked on his timing, because for a heavyweight at that time, you know, no one had ever seen anybody with that kind of speed or hand speed or foot speed. I would just like to know if that was all just God given, or was that way of timing was something that he came up, you know, with a way of developing that.
Also, we had Mike Tyson here on Sports Jam. Do you feel, if Mike Tyson had the proper handling, that he would have become the greatest champion ever?
I don't think he was the greatest boxer. He had one of the most deadliest punches, but I think Ali would have defeated him easily. You know, I think foot speed and hand speed, plus Ali could take a heck of a punch too. Which, you know, of course he's paid dearly for, but, you know, the left hook that Joe Frazier nailed him with in the first fight that he just got right up, that would have taken the head off of three other people. I mean, that's one of the most incredible knockdowns in boxing history. And he just got right back up, you know. But I wouldn't see Tyson defeating Muhammad, or anybody else for that matter.
You mentioned that of the fighters of today, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, and you mentioned how they're the lighter weights, not the heavyweights. Do we need a heavyweight boxer to come onto the scene, and where can we find him?
You know, the Klitschkos are pretty good bangers, but they're not really boxers. You know, they're just enormous. You know, they're big guys. I think someone will emerge from the wings, you know. But I miss the personalities, you know, of the earlier fighters, the Frasers, the Alis, you know. These guys were so charismatic, you know. I mean, they were just unbelievable. So I think someone will emerge at some point.
Why haven't they?
I don't know. It's just some kind of lull in the heavyweight division, I think. You know, it's just, you know, for years the heavyweight division just eclipsed everything, you know, because of the I think the personalities. You know, you have some interesting personalities. Floyd Mayweather is an interesting personality. You know, you have some people like that. But I don't really know. I think someone will emerge from the heavyweight division at some point.
So if you could go back in time and see a fight, not knowing the result but just wanting to see the fight, or if you could create a fight with any boxer of any time, what would that be?
I think I'd want to go back and see the Ali Cleveland Williams fight. To me, that's one of the most incredible boxing exhibitions I've ever seen. I'd like to see that one. The Thriller in Manila with Ali Frazier, that was just an amazing fight too. Also, I wouldn't mind going back as far as Joe Louis, you know, that era, or back to Jack Dempsey and Jess Willard. I mean, that would be an interesting period, you know, to go back and watch also.
I think for musicians, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm, you know, you would know better than I, the next gig is always the best gig. But what has been the best moment for you? If you could put it all down to might be the best moment of you on stage or in the studio, maybe it's a funny moment. What's the best moment for Vic Juris?
I don't know. I don't really have like one particular moment. I think. One, if I look back, playing with Sarah Vaughan at Carnegie Hall, just being part of a large orchestra behind her, that was a great thrill. You know, also being at a rehearsal with her, doing the rehearsal herself from the piano, she was a consummate musician. That was a big thrill. Recording with Mel Torme was another big thrill. I mean, getting to meet some of the people. You know, when you get to meet someone, you know, and you grew up and you idolize them and you get to work with them in some capacity, it's so rewarding. You know, getting to play with Dizzy Gillespie or Phil Woods. You know, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, it's been a good run and a lot of fun, you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're throwing the names out of these great players. It has to make you think that it's all been rather worth it for Vic Juris, hasn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't change anything. I mean, as a 12-year-old, I knew that I wanted a life in music, and I just persisted, you know.
Sharing that music with younger students now is a passion of yours. Why do you want to do that?
Well, it's important that that things keep moving forward. There's so many great young players today who are really interested in jazz and improvised music, and so I make the rounds every week between Rutgers, the New School, and SUNY Purchase, teaching private guitar lessons as well as ensembles, you know, working with people in that capacity, and you know, playing jazz classics and encouraging them to bring in their original compositions, and you know, keeping the music alive and keeping it moving forward.
People like myself, when we watch you, we're amazed. Just to be able to enjoy yourself as a guitarist, for someone like myself, is it ever too old to learn how to play the guitar?
No, I you know, it's it, you know for. If you want to get into it just as a non-professional, it's a great stress reliever. You know, just that play, even myself, if something's bothering me or I'm tense or upset, I pick up the guitar and play for 15 minutes, I feel so much better. You know, so I think it'd be good for a lot of you know, people who are in a corporate capacity or have a lot of stress in their life, I think it's a good way to release that tension.
Those who want to see Vic Juris live, 55 Bar is a good place to catch you. Tell us about that gig.
The first Sunday every month from 6 to 9. We've been doing it for a couple of years. And, you know, it's basically a trio with myself, bassist Jay Anderson, and drummer Adam Nussbaum. We just recorded a new CD for Steeplechase that should be out sometime soon. But that's a great intimate setting for us, a wonderful club, 55 Bar. And, you know, we do the early set. There's no cover charge. You got no excuse. Come down.
That's Christopher Street, right?
Christopher Street, right near 7th Avenue.
And you have a tour coming up with Richard Galliano.
Yeah, we just kind of put that one together. We'll be touring Canada in the fall. And then also, I think we're going to do four nights at the Jazz Standard. So I'll probably be playing mostly acoustic guitar, and that set. George Mraz is going to play bass. So it's going to be a nice thing.
And you continue to provide great music for us, Vic. Thanks so much for joining us on Sports Jam.
Thank you, Doug. What a pleasure.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out the extended podcast version of the show with Vic Juris by going to WBGO.org/SportsJam. Find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session at 7:30 on WBGO next Wednesday night, I'll see you at the game.